Hey, good morning, everyone. Dave Weiner here. It is Thursday, November 16th, 2017. It still feels like, God, it feels like 1995. Why did I pick up the phone today? Well, because I've been having an interesting discussion on Twitter in the form of direct messages, so it's been private. With the publisher of a leading magazine, which of course means, I guess, website these days. And I haven't asked for or received permission to say who it is. If it becomes public, then at some point I will say who it is. But it's not important for the purpose of this example. So I met this guy at the Newsgeist conference, and I had a lot of really interesting conversations there, and many of them, it was either we pretty much agreed on everything or we didn't talk. It was like people didn't seek me out who were the people that I felt I needed to connect with, and I guess that what I recommend, what I ask of news industry is pretty harsh sounding to their ears. And but this one guy, we did actually have a long conversation, and it has continued. And the question is that, okay, so we have Breitbart and Alex Jones and Fox News and all of these publications and news organizations and whatever you want to call them. I don't call them news organizations. They're more like propaganda. They're not trying to be accurate. I mean, I heard an interview with one of the reporters in Breitbart on The Daily a couple of months ago, and the guy more or less admitted that he wasn't trying to, you know, tell the actual story. He had made up a story, and he was just telling that over and over again. He admitted it. It's obvious. I think that actually it would surprise a lot of reporters to know that I think most people who listen to that stuff do realize that it's not real. People are smarter than you think. It was like, anyway, I don't want to digress. So, and then I heard an interview with Steve Bannon on the same program, on The Daily podcast, and Bannon said, you know, there's nothing like this on the left. And I don't like the left and right designations. I think if you were to actually look up the definitions, you'd find that they're not accurate. It's not really what's going on. It's not conservative versus liberal. It really comes down to whether or not you want people who are trying to tell the truth versus people who are not trying to tell the truth. That would be the dividing line. I want to read articles that are written by people who are trying to tell the truth, who, if the truth didn't match up with their opinion, wouldn't go ahead and report that as fact. And I also admit that there's an awful lot of stuff that I can tell you on its face is not true that's reported in news organizations that would tell you that they are trying to report the truth all the time. But then if you really ask them about it, you know, do you really think that's true? And what they're really reporting is conventional wisdom mostly. And and the more cloistered it is, the further they drift from the actual reality that the rest of us are experiencing. But there's a difference between Breitbart and The Atlantic, or Breitbart and MSNBC. Because, while they're opinionated, they still are. Well, anyway, there's a difference. So, what I want to do, and what I think we need to do, is to create what Steve Bannon says doesn't exist, which is one place you can go to get news that's vetted. That would be the way I would describe it. And that you get started off with the basic news sources that we have now, The Atlantic, The New Republic, The National Review. I think for the most part, they certainly do tilt it, but I think they're, you know, Foreign Policy, The Economist, The Washington Post, The New York Times, The LA Times, The New Yorker, New York Magazine. There probably are another 100 or so that I think that would fit in. And now we have the technology to do this. There's no problem. The question is, now this is what happened, okay, is that much to my surprise, and this guy is a publisher of a news magazine that exists on the web. It doesn't exist on Twitter, and it doesn't exist on Facebook either. It has a website. And he says, well, I looked at your river and I'm happier using Twitter, because he already has a tweet deck customized with the lists of news organizations that he's following. And this is developed over years, presumably. I haven't asked him, but I'm assuming that it's developed over years. And he's comfortable with it. The same way I'm comfortable with my rivers. I mean, I could not. That is how I get the news. I have a multi-tabbed set of rivers. I'll just tell you what they are. I don't actually check all of them. I have one that is just the feeds which I subscribe to. So whenever I want to subscribe to a feed, I drop it into this list. And I add maybe two or three feeds a month to this list. And there are RSS feeds, of course. Then I have the New York Times, the Washington Post. I have a river that contains world news. I have NBA news, Major League Baseball, and movies. And I also have podcatch.com. And I have a tab in there for podcasts, but I don't use it there. I use it on podcatch.com because it is customized and has a media player sitting there. And it has landing pages where you can comment on stuff. And I don't use all the features that podcatch.com has, but I do depend on a bunch of them. And so, but it's also River. It's using the same River software. So we come down to it, and I think we're at an impasse. So my friend is going to, obviously, is going to keep using Twitter. And it struck me because another friend of mine, Om Malik, who comes from tech industry in San Francisco, he's now a venture capitalist. He also is a journalist. He writes a column. I think he writes a column now for New Yorker. He started GigaOM, but now he's doing VC, and, he's a really nice guy. I mean, seriously nice guy, and a believer in tech, and also a believer in independent developers. I think that most VCs have to be believers in independent developers, because that's what they invest in, right? That's where the money is made in tech. It's not made in adding on features to Twitter. We know that because Twitter fired all their developers a couple of years ago, more than probably like 5 years ago. They just said, well, thanks very much, but we're going to just continue without you guys, which kind of killed the VC opportunity there, right? But I like using Twitter as an API. I use it for identity. I like developing for Twitter, but I cannot get in to the user experience. I can't get in there. Because I can't. Technically impossible for me to get in there. So, and the same is true for Facebook. And this is a perennial problem in tech. It is cyclic. It happens over and over and over again. Which is, what happens is a big tech company or two or three big tech companies dominate a market and control the market. And they own the exclusive right to evolve the software for it. So, for example, Apple with the Macintosh, or Microsoft with Windows, or Microsoft. Then the next thing came after that were web browsers. So you had MSIE, and you had Netscape, and Firefox, and Omni, and whatever. And then that was no longer the leading edge. Then it became Twitter and Facebook and Snapchat and Instagram, and that might be it. But the pattern that repeats is that it starts off being an open market, and then it stops being an open market. And what that means is other developers, independent developers, cannot get in there, and they can't make new stuff. Unless you're willing to separate yourself from the platform as a user, once you do that, everything's possible. And so when somebody looks at the river interface, the user interface, you should look at it, this is the point of the podcast, is you should look at it a little bit differently from the way you look at Twitter and Facebook, because it can be changed. It is not frozen. And if you don't like the way I do it, you can hire another programmer to do it the way you want it to be. And also, if you're dealing with a good developer, who respects users, not only, I'm speaking of myself, of course, I think I do respect users. I more than respect them. I thirst for them. I am so dry. My mouth, all right, let's not go there. I need users to drive the process, to make happy, to show, to create new features for, to delight, so that they spread the word of mouth and we get more users. So why should the news industry be doing this? Why should they, they have the choice as users, as individuals. Guy's a publisher of a major news organization. Well, I would argue that it's not just good for business, it's essential for their business. I mean, if they were to look at this situation in a completely different way and ask themselves, how much of a future do you have with Twitter and Facebook controlling your distribution? And that also ought to factor into the thinking on this. It's a yet another advantage to going with the open platform, because any effort you put into that, into making that work better, to making it, to giving it a better, making it better than Twitter, even if it's equal to Twitter, just equal to Twitter, even if it's just equal, it's still way better, because it can evolve. It's not frozen. It's not stuck waiting for Twitter's engineers to decide that they want to give the feature. Because the other thing that happens in the tech world as we go through this cycle over and over again is that once a company has locked up a market, as Twitter and Facebook have locked up the market, their incentive to move, it disappears. They have no reason to improve their system, and therefore they don't. It's, you know, because the people who ultimately make the decisions about whether or not to add features and improve the experience for their platform, the people who make those decisions make them strictly on economic terms. There's no aesthetics. There's no feeling of wonder. There's no excitement about the future. These are absolute bean counter people. The ones who actually make the call, they don't believe in Mother Teresa. I've actually been called Mother Teresa by these people. Who are you, Mother Teresa? In case you don't know, Mother Teresa fed the poor. She was herself very poor, and she was not motivated by making money. And I have to say that I'm not motivated by making money either. I like to make money. I imagine that Mother Teresa probably liked to make money too. But the question is, how much of your time do you direct towards the making of money? And I don't direct any of my time to that, to be honest with you. And I haven't even when I was poor, you know. And it's not to say I never have. I have. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to do what I do. I guess that's all I have to say, is that it's a complicated situation. It is not simple. One should not look at the, if you're in the news business, or if you're in the software business or the tech business, and you're not Twitter and Facebook, then you should look at it a little bit differently from the way you are looking at it, probably. And you should be willing to suffer a little bit of pain of changing the process by which you get news. to help develop a new environment for news that gives you a better shot at a future. So, wouldn't it be, I guess, wouldn't it be nice not to be dependent on Facebook? I leave you with that thought. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.